Route 616, your home for all Finn's Marvel main continuity. Welcome back. This is episode 64. We've got everybody here again. We've got Bill, of course.
Hey.
And we've got... Woo! It's Bill's gift. It's Dan.
Wow. Wow.
I probably shouldn't have killed Bill at the start of this, but
that was really good. I just can't laugh today.
Yeah, okay.
I planned that on my walk home. Just by
the way. It was a good one. It was a really good one. Yeah. Dan has no idea how deeply you just buried him.
Not a clue.
I was gonna say Dan and Ric Flair are very similar in the fact that they won't go quietly into the night. So
you also don't want to leave them unattended on a flight with flight attendants.
Well, he got that part. Shit.
How are you guys this fine Friday evening?
Potentially high end medication. I took two extra strength Tylenols right before this, so.
Oh, good, good. Ryan?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay. Get a couple days off now, so. Party
was
sweet.
I was thinking about if I get a chance, I'm going to go out and get Newcastle t-shirts for Ryan and I. Yeah.
Why not? I already hate you.
Yeah, there you go. How's that Carabao Cup going there, buddy?
Oh, that hurt. I knew it was going to be bad. I wasn't expecting it to be that bad.
That was the most embarrassing moment you guys have had in your lifetime.
Yeah.
That was even more embarrassing than getting gut stomped 7-0 at Anfield.
Yeah, and the worst thing is, the Glazers are going to take nothing away from it.
They don't care.
No, they don't.
They don't care, but that was... And Ryan, I know you don't know what we're actually talking about, but... I'm not exaggerating when I say this is the lowest I have ever seen Man United sink.
Yeah, we don't deserve to be in the top 10 with the way we're performing.
They were playing against a Newcastle team with 8 replacement players. Yeah, because Newcastle's got their 5 of their first line players down injured. Okay, they're where Liverpool was, you know, like 4 years ago. Right. Half the team
except they're
injured.
Nowhere near the team Liverpool is at full strength.
Granted. But they literally were putting on... it was like Manchester United was playing against a bunch of under-18s. Third string players that, you know, come out of League 2. And they got stomped.
Ouch.
And it was like, no, there's no way... There's literally no way they should have lost that game.
It was the first time in years I've considered turning off a United game halfway through.
Yeah, I was just in shock. I was literally in shock. I could not believe, first of all, that Newcastle scored on them at all.
Yeah.
But that they scored 3. And they were nice goals. These were, you know,
lucky. It wasn't
chips.
Like the last goal in your match, which, what the hell was that?
What, when Nunes popped it over his head?
No, the one that was just like 30 or 40 yards out, just gentle kick, and it just rolls in. The goaltender's like halfway up the pitch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When Salah
the one over his head that was actually nice got called back for an offside.
Yeah, the one that was over that Salah decided to go for a bit of a run.
Yeah, and the goaltender's like two-thirds of the way up the field, just like
doing
way
something.
Out of position, and it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I don't
I'm
I
not taking anything away from Liverpool on that call,
no,
but what were they thinking?
But... Well, it was a good call on the defender's part to, you know, kind of lob it out there in the hopes that Salah could get to it, right?
Yeah. Just what was the goaltender doing up there?
I have no idea. I have no idea. It was the stupidest thing I've seen a goaltender do in a long time. But, yeah.
Because, like, with the dire state of United, I've realized it doesn't matter who we have as manager.
No, it never did.
Yeah, the Glazers won't let them do anything. To actually manage. And the team knows it. That's why the team doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. This is the only cure, literally, and it's just an opinion, the only cure for United right now beyond getting new ownership, because they do need new ownership, is
that's been apparent for a while now.
Right? They need to rebuild from the bottom up and start with the base. They can stick with, say, 70% of the roster they've got.
Yeah.
If they can
Let's
go
keep
back
McGuire.
To basics. Yeah. If they can go back to basics and just start learning how to pass again.
We'll never be allowed to do that, though.
Yeah, but play as a team again.
Yeah, and we'll never be allowed to do that because the Glazers want to sell T-shirts, so they're not going to let whoever's managing pull non-performing players. Because, I mean, since Sir Alec left, we've had four of the top managers in Europe.
Yep.
And none of them have been able to get anything out of that team because they're not allowed to actually manage.
They say AEW is a T-shirt company.
Well, I mean, they could have stuck with Ragnick if he'd been allowed to do what he was doing.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think they've had it. Even Ole, I don't think it was that bad. Man.
Ole could have done something good with that team.
Well,
because they
had
the talent.
Yeah, but he had been. Like, his first season was brilliant.
Yeah,
it was pretty good what he was doing at first.
Yeah, that's been the story with all the managers. We bring them in, they do well, and then the Glazers start meddling because they're not so, like, the big names they insisted on signing aren't getting to play.
Yeah.
And so they insist they play, and then the team falls apart because people start realizing that, you know, performance isn't tied to rewards. You're going to play if you're a big name no matter what.
That's right, yeah.
And so then the whole team checks out and stops trying.
Yeah,
and then we fall apart. The coach gets fired. They bring in another big name, and it immediately cycle repeats.
Yeah. It was, like I say, it never occurred to me when that game started. Right, literally when you guys started against Newcastle the other day in the Carabao Cup, I looked at it and I saw what Newcastle had for a lineup. I didn't actually recognize eight of the names.
Yeah.
It was like, I had
no idea. And if you don't recognize the names, that's saying something.
I don't know who these guys are. I'm thinking, what the hell is going on? I mean, I knew they had injuries. I knew they had five men down. But I didn't expect that, you know, he would literally put eight, you know, backbenchers on the field. One guy hadn't played in 3 years. Like, and he scored in that match.
Yeah. You thought I was joking when I said Wolves are unironically better than United this year.
But literally,
they literally are. We struggled to get past the worst team in the league.
Yeah, you did. Well, first of all, you should never have beaten Wolves. Wolves should have won that game.
They should have, but that's not what I'm talking about with the worst team in the league. We played Brentford and Luton Town and struggled to beat them.
Yeah, you did struggle to beat Luton, which was not a good sign.
No.
But there's just literally, like I said, when I realized one of the Newcastle players was a player that they'd signed years ago that hadn't played a match in 3 years, and they were putting him on the field, and I thought, what are they doing? Are they really that desperate, you know, for warm bodies to get into uniform? And they are, to be fair.
They weren't playing him because they thought United would be easy. They were playing him because they wanted to rest their closer to first team players for league play.
The few players that are still healthy. But then this guy goes out and scores a goddamn goal.
Yeah.
And it's like, what the fuck is going on? Anyway, that match was, and again, I'm not saying this to be a prick. That was the lowest I've ever seen Man U. I've never seen anything this embarrassing before for a team.
I knew it was coming because I watched the City game.
Yeah.
The highlights don't do justice to how terrible we were in the City game.
Grit. But, I mean, Harry Maguire was the least of the problems in this match, right?
No, Harry Maguire is on the redemption
arc. Been actually performing for us this year.
Well,
he got motivated by almost getting booted.
Well, he got motivated by the fact that fans boo him everywhere he goes.
Right? Yeah, he hates the fact that he gets booed out of the building everywhere he goes.
Yeah,
and it worked. He actually is trying.
Yeah.
But like, he's always going to be a limited player.
Yeah, he's too slow. They never should have signed him in the first place.
But he's slow and he's not got the best decision making. He panics.
Yeah, his game sense is not that good sometimes. But, I mean, he was not to blame for this loss.
He's been one of our best players this season.
Yeah, Ten Hag didn't go in there with the right game plan.
And he's admitted, he said this was his fault, he was stubborn.
Yeah, he didn't, I don't know what he was thinking, but he has to shoulder a lot of the blame for this loss. You can't go on to that field with a team of players like that and lose to what basically works out to be a League Two team.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, these are guys that, this was a beer league team that they lost to.
It sounds like the jobbers went over.
Not just the jobbers. We're talking Bastion Booger winning the WWE title.
Jesus.
We're talking the Avengers taking on Porcupine and losing.
That's my dream movie.
No, I'm serious.
This is not hyperbole. It's not me doomering about the team. The team is embarrassingly bad this year. I haven't had fun watching a United game once this season because they've just always been... Even the games they won, they were awful and it was hard to watch.
Yeah, and now they're playing the Fulham team that just got a huge, huge a positivity boost off their win. Next weekend's not going to go well for you again.
No.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Fulham should be an easy win, but it's not going to be.
Tony's going to treat them like they're CM Punk shortly after beating up Luke Perry's kid.
Wow.
I was wondering where you were going to go when you finally said something.
But anyway. I was tempted to say, like, there was CM Punk with a muffin in his hand, but no, Tony just took it that time.
But anyway, I hated to bring that up, but the truth is, I was so stunned by that loss.
United this year are bad enough that it's not even funny anymore.
Yeah, no, it stopped being funny. It stopped being an internet joke, and it's become how do you support a team that's sunk to this level? When you've got players like Antony, they paid $70 million for this guy.
What?
And he can't get out of his own fucking way. He's like, what the hell is going on? And they're just, and you know what, Bill? I want to go back to a film that I recommended to you that Ryan should watch but won't. Called The Damn United.
Oh, that's such a good movie.
It is a brilliant film, but do you get the feeling that this is what's going on in that field?
Absolutely.
That these players just stopped fucking caring. Casemiro is the only one who cares, and he's too slow now to do anything about it.
Yeah, they've realized that, like I said, they've realized their performance doesn't matter.
Yeah.
They can check out, not show up, and the big-name players that they spent tons of money on are going to start the match no matter how they perform, because if they don't, the Glazers are going to yell at Ten Hag, why aren't you starting the guys that sell the shirts?
It's pretty much like how it's kind of like the WCW hierarchy in the late 90s.
It is. Like, unironically, you're right. Old guys that were big names 5 years earlier because we can sell merch off them. Who cares if the product's bad?
Yeah, or was it Forbush Man, the guy with the pot in his head and the long jaws?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like him taking on the X-Men and winning. It's just there's such a disconnect now that they're not even completing the easy passes. The back three or four, depending on what Ten Hag does on any given occasion, is now so scared that they're not pushing the ball forward.
It's painfully obvious. They all just want to leave. They want to get off the pitch and go home.
Yeah. But they're like you normally would expect, like when you watch Liverpool's back line, they move the ball up. You watch Manchester's back line in this game, they once or twice they tried to move the ball up, but most of the time they were just trying to get the ball out of bounds. They were just trying to get rid of the ball.
Or no matter where they are, look for Onana and pass back to him.
Yeah, pass back to him, try and get it to the midfield. But they weren't trying to get it to the midfield. is
no. He'd just they pass just... it right back to one of them, and then they'd pass it back to him again.
Until, you know, Newcastle came charging down the field, and they just literally just kick it out of bounds. And it's like, you know, how do you win a game when you're not trying to come up with a way to attack?
I haven't played him for years.
Well, this was the thing. I mean, oddly enough, and this is a weird thing to say, something you'll never hear me say ever again. Manchester used one of their best players was Hannibal.
Yeah.
He was one of the few players who was trying, and he was trying too hard.
Yeah. Right? Hannibal got overexcited, but at least he had his heart in the game.
Oh, he did. He did. There's absolutely, because he was pelting up and down the field, but he had nothing to work with.
I like Hannibal.
He had nothing to work with.
No.
He just did. Right. He was playing with a bunch of guys who didn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
You know, so he'd put himself in a good spot, or he put the ball in a good spot, and nobody would really do anything about it.
Yeah, he's young enough that I don't think he's realized that it doesn't matter. He's not going to start starting games no matter what he does.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that's the difference. He's young. He wants to break into the first team. He's got something to work for, even if the season's a write-off.
Yes.
And but he's not going to break into the first team because no one outside of the United diehards knows who he is, and no one's going to buy a Hannibal jersey.
No. Well, they might sell 10.
Yeah, but not in numbers that the Glazers are going to care about. Yeah.
We'll get you one, Bill. We'll see if we can make that a Christmas present. We'll get you a Hannibal jersey.
Oh, fuck. I would wear that everywhere. That kid's got hurt.
But in the end, I mean, I know it's just a Carabao Cup, and it doesn't really matter that much in the end. But, you know, I mean, because most other teams like Klopp was playing mostly
second-string
It'll
look pretty
players.
With Newcastle.
Yeah. You know,
Here's the thing, though. It does matter to United because we're not winning the fucking league this year. We need the cups if we're going to get anything from the season. Yeah.
And I do have to confess, before we start actually talking about what we're supposed to be talking about, I did screw up. I said Liverpool won the Carabao Cup last year. They didn't. It was Man U. We won the Carabao Cup the year before.
Yeah.
Right. It was my mistake. I kind of lost a year there.
I know, and it was so funny to me that you were talking it up, and I'm like, so you're telling me you're a fan of the team that won the Cup last year?
Yeah. Right, but yeah, it was Man U. I guess I just kind of blanked it out of my memory or something. Like it didn't really happen. I was kind of doing the Rip Van Winkle thing. You know, it was an episode of What If? What if Man U won something?
It's the last time for a couple of years that's going to happen, I think.
Well, unless they can find a way to ship off some of these players like Anthony, yeah.
I don't think the Glazers will allow it. The Glazers are insane about that team. They inflated the value of it. The Saudis were willing to pay the inflated value.
Yep.
And then they're like, no, we can get even more.
Yeah, they will. You know, well, if you can pay $6 billion, pay $7.
Yeah, and they're never going to actually sell until they've... Yeah, they're not going to sell until they've milked every cent out of that team.
Yeah, and there's, like, the top 10 teams in Europe. Real Madrid probably is the second most known team in the world behind Man U. Okay? And Real Madrid wouldn't go for more than $2.5 billion. Right? Liverpool would go for 2.25.
Yeah.
Okay, and Liverpool's in the top 10 best teams in the world. Right? Real Madrid, Barcelona, PSG, you're not going to get more than $2.5 billion for them. The Saudis were willing to pay $6 billion for Man U, which is $4.5 billion more than it's worth.
Yeah, not even because United, no matter how bad we get, we have name value.
Yeah, you're still worth up to $2 billion.
$2 billion is just the name value of Manchester United.
Yeah, the actual intrinsic value, I believe, is 1.4, is what they're listed as.
Yeah,
you know, as far as actual proper value. Right, or, you know, assets-wise, $1.4 billion. And, you know, the Saudis were willing to pay $6 billion in the Glazers.
It's pretty insane not to take that deal.
Well, that's the thing. I don't understand why. I mean,
because they think the Super League's going to happen.
Oh, okay, yeah, to a point, but it's not.
No, it's not, but they think it's going to happen, and that's why they don't want to sell. because they think that it's going to happen, and somehow Man U, in the state it's in now, will qualify for the Super League.
Not going to happen.
God, no.
No. But it's like everybody.
You know, if they had the Super League today, it would be Liverpool, Arsenal, and City from England.
Yeah. Definitely City. Definitely Arsenal. Liverpool, maybe.
Yeah, Liverpool doesn't have the name recognition of the others, despite them performing well.
Yeah, and we do have a good
history. You have Chelsea in there.
No,
you're not wrong. Chelsea has a chance.
Yeah, Liverpool's won the most Champions League titles out of all the Premier League teams.
Yeah.
But this year they're not.
Calm down, Montreal Canadiens.
Well, the thing is, Liverpool, despite winning a lot, doesn't have the name recognition with the casual fans.
That's right. That is true.
Somehow they escaped notice, even though they've performed really well. I don't know what it is, but like they're not the team you've heard of from England.
Yeah, they're not notorious like Man U, right? Man U, Man City are notorious teams.
Yeah, if you've heard of football, you've heard of them.
Yeah, but this, I mean, the Saudis, I don't know what they're doing because, I mean, I heard the interview with Salah where he basically said, I don't want to leave Liverpool, right? That's why I didn't want to go. I didn't want them to sell me to Saudi. I just did not want to do this. I wanted to stay here. And he does love being in Liverpool. I mean, this is where he finally got his chance to shine.
Yeah, he feels he owes Liverpool back for giving him that chance.
Right, because nobody else was going to take a chance on him. And when Liverpool bought him, you know, most people didn't even know who he was.
No. And now he's like one of the biggest names in football.
Yeah, like he's setting
records. I'd say he's top five right now.
Oh, yeah, he's setting records hand over fist. You know, I mean, he should be in the Ballon d'Or conversation every year from now on. Right. But anyway, beyond that.
Honestly, I think the best thing that could happen to United right now is getting relegated.
It could happen if you guys don't get your shit together.
Yeah, and I think it would be the best thing because then the Glazers wouldn't want it.
Yeah.
And we might get unloaded to someone
who's
willing to make the sacrifices to make the team actually perform well again instead of just milk it for all it's worth.
Yeah. Well, if you don't pull it together in the next 10 games, you're going to continue to slip down the table.
Yeah, I'm starting to feel like we're going to end up 14th. I don't think we're going to hit the relegation spots this year.
Probably not. Wolves are definitely going to go above you.
Wolves should pass us.
There's Ryan going, I like the Wolves, whatever they are. That's a team, isn't it?
I see us falling to 14th.
Where the fuck's Wolverhampton? Wolverhampton's working their way up the table. Right now, they're
shockingly good given the deficiencies in the construction of that team this year.
Yeah,
right. Or for the past 3 years.
Well, I think the top five spots are pretty much top six. Even are pretty much tied up for the rest of the season.
They are.
You know, Man U, Arsenal, Liverpool, Brighton. Didn't expect to hear me say that.
No.
And even Newcastle, if they can get some of your guys back on the field.
Newcastle has a chance. They've been getting good couple of years.
They can get there. They just need to get over these injuries. Same thing, like I say, same thing Liverpool went through 4 years ago where all our best players were in the hospital.
Yeah.
You know, and we still managed to keep from being relegated. You know, it wasn't pretty, but we survived. So, anyway, skipping blithely past Bill's embarrassment.
Well, now I'm nice and depressed. Let's talk about some comic books.
Let's talk about the X-Men, shall we?
All X-Men all the time, as we got 5 X-Men issues to cover this week.
Yeah.
It only took us almost 25 minutes to get there, but here we are. so we're going to do issues 14 through 18 today.
I mean, we could talk about Taylor Swift's Eras Tour.
I mean, 1989 Taylor's version, I guess we could talk about. I don't know. Anyways, X-Men number 14. This one's titled Amana Stock, The Sentinels. The debut of the Sentinels here. We've got Stan Lee writing this bad boy, of course. We've got Jack Kirby and Werner Roth, a.k.a. Jay Gavin on art. Yeah. Vince Aculetis on inks. Jack Kirby and Wally Wood on the cover. Does look like there's a taste of Wally Wood on there. Sam Rosen's on letters. September 1965 release date, 20-page toy. And Bill will take us away to start.
The X-Men are still recovering from injuries sustained in their battle against the Juggernaut. The Professor examines them and gives all the recovering X-Men a clean bill of health and a much-needed vacation. However, this would only prove to be a minor reprieve for the X-Men, because at that very moment, scientist Bolivar Trask is holding a press conference to denounce the mutant race as a menace to humanity that must be crushed. The press eats it up, and Trask's paranoid rants end up landing on the front page of newspapers all over America.
Ooh,
this comic feels topical.
Yeah, it's very prescient. It's not like it didn't happen 10 years earlier in the U.S. when they went after the Mexicans. Thank you, Eisenhower. Just so you know, thank you, Eisenhower. You bastard. Okay. Anyway.
I was making a joke about the modern-day opinion on trans people, but that works, too.
Yeah, now one of the U.S.'s more notorious episodes of racism.
Yeah.
That somehow seems to keep being forgotten. It didn't make the history books. I don't get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, odd.
Back at the X-Mansion, the X-Men change out of their uniforms and conceal their mutant natures. They prepare to depart on their holiday. Jean leaves with Warren, leaving Scott to wonder how he can compete with his rich and handsome teammate for Jean's affections. When Hank and Bobby offer an invite for Scott to join them, Summers declines and departs on his lonesome, passing the newspaper to Professor Xavier before leaving.
Oh, Muffet.
This is peak sulky Scott.
Wow.
Opening the paper, Xavier is horrified to find Trask's epithet against mutants, complete with a wild story about how mutants will take over and enslave humanity. Feeling that this will bring about anti-mutant hysteria, the professor calls the National Television Network to arrange a debate between himself and Trask over the supposed mutant threat. That night on television, Professor Xavier and Bolivar Trask argue their points to a national television audience, sparking debate all over New York and around the United States. Bolivar offers the audience a means of defense against the supposed mutant menace by demonstrating his new invention on Xavier, unaware that Xavier is really a mutant himself. His new robot enforcers, the Sentinels. Revealing that he has an army of these robots at his command, Trask begins to order the section leader, Sentinel Number 1. However, things take an unexpected twist when the robot suddenly turns on Trask, stunning him with a ray beam and declaring the Sentinels as superior to humanity. Subduing Xavier and Trask, the Sentinels wait for further orders, allowing Professor X to send out a mental summons to his X-Men asking for help. The first to receive the call are Bobby and Hank, who are at Coffee A Go-Go, listening to poetry. I don't know a lot about the beatnik culture, but I think I know enough to know that Stan doesn't know anything about it either.
No, he doesn't. Because that is so beatnik. Oh my god.
Yes, it's a very stereotyped beatnik environment.
Yeah it is.
Yeah, all you need is the beret and the pipe.
Oh, that's on Bernard the Poet.
Oh, goody. Goody. But that's all you need is the beret and the pipe.
That's pretty much all he has.
Right. What we need is Rimmer to put Sark in his place.
They then spring into action as Iceman and the Beast. Warren Worthington also gets the call while sitting down for supper with his parents and excuses himself from the table to change into the Angel and fly off to answer the professor's summons. Back at the TV studio, the professor tries to keep the crowd calm with his mental powers, but finds the strain incredible. The Sentinels decide to take Dr. Trask to their headquarters, leaving Sentinel 3R to guard the humans. Iceman and Beast arrive on the scene and begin trying to take the Sentinel out of commission. They manage to knock the robot off its feet, but then the Iceman is hit by a ray blast. Scott, having heard the professor's summons, takes a cab to the TV studio. He accidentally drops his ruby quartz glasses while in the cab, causing him to fire an optic blast through the roof. Regaining his glasses, he's chased by an angry mob who had bought into Trask's anti-mutant hysteria. Rushing into the studio and losing the mob, Scott changes into his Cyclops uniform and comes to Beast's aid. Beast is knocked out in their fight against the last standing Sentinel. However, before Cyclops can deal with it, the Sentinel suddenly deactivates on its own and falls over. Mentally commanding his charges so as to not give away his secret of being a mutant and leader of the X-Men, Xavier orders Cyclops to revive the others and help the people out of the studio so that they might examine the Sentinel and find out what deactivated it. The other Sentinels, meanwhile, have escaped with Trask as their prisoner. Flying away from the studio, they come into contact with the Angel. The Sentinels break off to attack him with their energy blasts. The Angel is able to evade their attack, but is drawn towards a speeding train, getting stuck on its roof. Coincidentally, Jean Grey happened to be riding this very train to answer the Professor's call for help and was able to help the Angel to flee from his attackers. She changes into Marvel Girl to give Angel a helping hand back on his feet. They join the other X-Men just as the Professor is able to mentally probe the mind of the Sentinel, who mumbled the word Master Mold before deactivating. With his probe, he learns the Sentinel's secret base and leads the X-Men to go out and rescue Trask from his wayward inventions. Meanwhile, at the Sentinel's base, Trask demands to know why his inventions have betrayed him. They explain to him that in order to protect humanity from mutants, they must first conquer the human race. Taking Trask into the control room, they are alerted of the X-Men's approach through their sophisticated computer systems. Outside, the X-Men park the Professor's Rolls-Royce in the location the Sentinel told them that its comrades were hiding. However, all they find is an empty meadow. Suddenly, the ground rises up, revealing a high-tech base that fires laser beams at them, catching the X-Men all by surprise. The end.
And that's why there's only 5 comics we're covering.
Yes.
Yeah. It goes to show also that it all takes a little probing.
It's amazing how well they nailed the Sentinels on their first outing, though.
It is very good. This is a very good comic. The Sentinels are great. Their design is wonky to see at first compared to what they become, but that's a little thing to overlook.
And even that's mostly there. It's mostly differences in art style rather than like a completely different design.
Yeah. It's mainly just Jack Kirby fucking shit.
You know Jack. You know Jack.
It's not Jack's finest work in my opinion, but...
That's because it's almost not Jack's work at all. Jack at most very lightly penciled the layouts.
Is that what Gavin added to this? Because...
Yeah, this is mostly J. Gavin art. Or Werner Roth, really. You can see it a lot. The people are too thin for it to be a Jack Kirby art. Kirby draws his men very
well, then I'll blame
bulky
him.
And like lantern jawed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Werner, well, the people, the X-Men themselves were okay, but it was... I guess I should have known because Kirby is better at the more out there stuff, so he should have been able to nail the Sentinels better. For what? Yeah. Why? Not that he didn't. I mean, this is the start of them, so it could be whatever. But
yeah, he was should have been able to the Eternals.
Make something better.
Oh, okay. We probably should rapidly move on to the next one.
Fair enough. Well, I gave this a 4.
I also gave it a 4.
I thought it was really good.
I liked it a lot. I didn't love it enough to give it a 5.
To be honest, probably one of the best first appearances of a major group or character so far.
Absolutely. definitely, I would say this is probably the best story arc of the original X-Men run. Other than maybe some of the stuff right at the end with Polaris and so, but...
Getting Juggernaut and then this is possibly the best five-issue stretch of the first however many years of Marvel.
Yeah.
I don't know. It might... it probably... X-Men was firing on all cylinders for these five issues.
It's sad how fast it fell off, because there's... The second arc we cover today is pretty good, but not at this level. And then it just starts plummeting.
Oh, good to know. For when I get back into X-Men.
There you go.
Yeah, no, X-Men is rapidly going to become the worst thing we read.
Nice.
Oh,
well,
boy, it's going to have to sink a lot.
Like, Dan... That's true, because we still have Daredevil.
Yeah, I was going to
say. It's going to become tied for the worst thing we read. Daredevil doesn't have the Locust.
Okay, fair enough. Well, let's move on to X-Men number 15. This one's this synopsis doesn't seem like it's as long as the last one was, so that's nice. Prisoners of the Mysterious Master Mole. Excuse me, this one's title. Stan Lee writes, of course. Jack Kirby... Jack Kirby and Werner Roth here for art again. Inks by Dick Ayers. Dick Ayers, Jack Kirby on the cover. Artie Simics on letters. October 1965 release date. 20-page story. And I'll be taking this one.
You got rid of the mold. I was saving that mold. It was going to be 2 foot high. Sorry.
But why, sir?
Because it annoys Rimmer.
He continued from the last issue.
Sorry.
Tracking the Sentinels back to the base to save Bolivar Trask, the X-Men are caught off guard by the base's defenses. The X-Men find the defenses too powerful, and Professor X calls for a retreat. Planning another strategy, the Professor has Iceman create a glider out of ice that he and Beast will ride, followed by the Angel, in an attempt to sneak into the base. As Cyclops blasts the glider into the air with his op... But I told you Dan couldn't go quietly. Anyway.
Yeah, sorry.
As Cyclops... That one really got Bill.
Yeah, speaking of going quietly.
Yeah. As Cyclops blasts the glider into the air with his optic blast, Hank and Bobby are soon captured and taken prisoner by coils that spring out of the defense system.
Nice.
Angel follows not far behind, however... However, he's forced to retreat when a flamethrower almost sets him ablaze. Well, that'll do it.
A little Icarus moment for him.
Beast and Iceman are then sealed within a cage and gas so that the Sentinels can examine them further. Witnessing this, Bolivar Trask denounces the Sentinels' plans to take over humanity in order to protect them from the mutant menace. The Sentinels take Trask to the creator and the machine he invented to create his Sentinels. The Massive Master Mold. Master Mold demands that Trask pledge his allegiance to him, or he will use the weapons cache that Trask has armed them with to destroy half of the United States. When Trask tells the giant robot that the X-Men will stop him, it almost gloats, telling Trask that it will examine the two captured mutants and defeat the others. Outside of the Sentinel base, the Professor attempts a different strategy on the Sentinels. Knowing that his mental powers have some effect on the robots, he exerts all his will, causing the Sentinels controlling the weapons within their base to suddenly shut down, leaving the remaining Sentinels incapable of action until they get further orders from the Master Mold. As Cyclops, Angel, and Marvel Girl break through the defenses to gain entry into the Sentinel base, the Beast is brought before Master Mold. Master Mold then forces Trask to use a psychoprobe device so that the robot might learn the origins of this mutant in hopes of learning a way to defeat them. Meanwhile, Cyclops and the others come across a bunch of deactivated Sentinels when they are spotted by one that is still active. With no orders on how to handle the intruders, the Sentinel tells the X-Men to follow it while it goes to get more instructions. The X-Men follow in hopes that it will bring them to its leader. As Beast recounts how his mutant powers gave him an advantage as a child over schoolyard bullies, the X-Men find Iceman. Before they are able to free Bobby, they are attacked by a team of Sentinels, which they easily defeat. Then they free Iceman and continue their search for Hank and Trask. Beast continues his tale, explaining that in high school, his mutant powers made him a football star. Makes sense. Attracting the attention of Professor X. He came to Hank's parents and offered to take Hank into his school to train him in the use of his powers. Hank, by this point, has not implicated Xavier's affiliation with the X-Men. However, Master Mold decides that learning the identity of the X-Men's leader would provide him with the key to destroying mutants, and he probes deeper. Monitoring the situation from...
There has been a lot of probing in this arc.
There has.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what makes it so good, who knows. Monitoring the situation from safety with his mental powers, Professor X sends out his astral form to try and stop Hank from outing him as the X-Men's leader. With the probe stopped, Xavier attempts to exert his mental will on Master Mold. However, the massive sentinel detects Xavier's presence and repels his astral form with microelectric blasts, sending the weakened Xavier to return to his body. The X-Men continue to fight their way through the Sentinels of Master Mold. Just when they think they have defeated all threats, the X-Men are suddenly pinned to the ground by a strong gravity ray. With the X-Men defeated, Master Mold demands that Trask create an army of Sentinels for him. He refuses, and Master Mold orders his minions to grab hold of Trask and prepare to force him to do Master Mold's bidding. The story is continued next issue.
Ooh.
So, yet again, a lot happening. Still a really good issue in my opinion. I gave this one 4 stars as well. I enjoy it. I thought these both were really good.
Yeah, this was another solid issue. I really like, for a very limited number of appearances, I really like the arc that Trask goes on.
Yeah, Trask's first incarnation here before they end up bringing them back down the line or whatever they do, and but Trask here is really good for such a short... it's a very effective arc for such a short arc. And also, the Sentinels are written very well so far. Master Mold's pretty good. I even like the slight deviation here to getting a bit of Beast's origin. That was even pretty fun.
Yeah, in general, I don't love that the Sentinels struggle with any sort of autonomous decision-making, but given that these are first generation, that gets a pass because it makes sense that they haven't ironed out all the bugs yet.
Yeah. There's a lot of little details that I'm willing to overlook with this being their first appearance like that, so...
Like, I actually think it's good for a short-term story that they're not very good at, responding to changing circumstances, because that's the sort of thing that you'd need to figure out how to program better.
Yeah.
And so, I suspect it's bad writing on Stan's part, but it's plausible that it was intended to show that they hadn't been developed that well yet.
Can we just go with bad writing by Stan?
It's the most likely option.
It's the most plausible.
Yeah.
Okay, anyways, let's go to X-Men number 16, titled The Supreme Sacrifice. Stanley, Jack Kirby, runner off, Dick Ayers, Jack Kirby on the cover. Letters by Artie Smick, November 1965, in a 20-page story. This will end their Sentinels arc, and I will take this away. It would help if I had not just closed the tab that I needed. That would have been cool. Good job on my end. It's okay, though. I can just simply go to my history, and boom, we're back. Okay.
Welcome to Friday night in Nova Scotia.
Woo! Anyways. What was this called? The Supreme Sacrifice, continued from the last issue.
The X-Men All the have subtlety you expect from Stan, giving away the big twist in this issue.
Well, you know.
You never do that.
No, no way. It's like how I would never make any of you, it's like how I would never make Bill cover the comics that they haven't read or anything like that.
Yeah.
Not like I did that last week or anything. Anyways, the X-Men have been defeated and captured by the Sentinels, leaving Professor X the only member of the group when captured. Having recovered from his failed attempt at trying to shut down Master Mold with his mental powers, Xavier witnesses the Sentinel base retract back into the ground, and decides to take a different approach to defeating this robotic menace. Deciding to go back to examine the deactivated robot at the television station, he mentally summons a passerby to pick him up and drive him into the city. Meanwhile, the X-Men have been imprisoned in a transparent cage, pinned to its surface by artificial gravity. Try as they might, they cannot break free. When Master Mold gets all the information he can from the Beast, he deems the X-Men a paltry threat and orders the Beast to be caged with his comrades. When Bolivar Trask asks Master Mold what he intends to do with the X-Men, the robot responds by telling him that he intends to eventually destroy them as per Trask's programming. Having realized the errors of his ways, Trask denounces this, but Master Mold is unswayed and threatens to destroy a nearby town if Trask doesn't agree to build more Sentinels. Back in New York City, New York, the professor is brought to the television station where he first encountered the Sentinels, and where one of their number still lays inert. Secretly probing the robot with his mental powers before a perplexed police officer, the professor learns that the Sentinel has a receiver unit much like a television set, and that something must have caused the interference. Looking out the window, he notices that the cause is a giant crystal on display atop the Crystal Products building.
This so gives the image crystallizes in his mind.
Course, he sees the future something. Hero Crystar.
What?
This gives Professor just the idea on how to destroy Master Mold and the other Sentinel.
Crystar?
It's Crystar or Crystar. I forget how it's pronounced. Mm. I'll send the picture.
Is he on top of the Chrysler building having a crisis?
I don't really know what he does because I don't think many people read it. I don't even think Bill's reached it yet because I think it was an 80s fan.
I definitely have not because I don't know what you're talking about.
I think it was an 80s fan because I got reminded of it last night when I looked at the Marvel Age new releases on Marvel Unlimited.
Okay, anyways. I just looked enough to see they were Marvel Age and then stopped paying attention.
Back at the Sentinel base, the other X-Men feel the artificial gravity of their cell weaken as the Sentinels prepare to put the Beast in the cell with them. Cyclops organizes the X-Men, and when a small opening is made in their transparent prison, they attack and break free. The Sentinels are caught off guard and trip over themselves as the X-Men gain the advantage and take out their captors with their mutant powers. The X-Men make a break for it. However, the Sentinels recover and fire their stun beams at the Unmutants, knocking them out. They are preparing to kill the X-Men when they suddenly collapse. It is because at that very moment outside, Professor X and the authorities have arrived in 3 helicopters carrying a giant crystal. Suddenly, the high-tech Sentinel base rises out of the ground and a giant cyclone firing cannons begins to attack the helicopters. Inside, the X-Men revive and are alerted telepathically by the professor of the Sentinels' weaknesses. Rushing off the face Master Mold, the X-Men are startled when the lights begin to go out as some giant machine beneath their feet begins operating, causing fuses all over the complex to blow. This is because Trask has begun the operations that allow Master Mold to create new Sentinels. Master Mold harnesses powerful electrical energy, channeling it into a device that will construct 8 new and more powerful Sentinel robots, V2! Realizing that with enough power, Master Mold can go on producing Sentinels forever and dominate all mankind. Trask finally decides that he cannot allow such a thing to happen, no matter the cost, denouncing Master Mold one more time and finding that his life is sacrificed. Trask smashes a fatal machine in the lab, causing a massive explosion. The X-Men, just in the outside corridor, are rocked by the explosion. The heat from the flames causes Iceman to pass out, prompting Beast to rescue his friend before he gets crushed under fallen debris. As the complex has fallen down around their heads, the X-Men manage to escape the destruction with the help of Marvel Girl's telekinetic powers. Outside, there is a close call as Beast carries Iceman out of the complex when the wall begins to crumble. Passing his unconscious comrade to the Angel, Beast quickly runs down the side of the complex by himself just moments before it explodes. Watching the destruction, the X-Men wonder what might have happened down there, completely unaware that Trask had learned the errors of his ways and sacrificed himself in order to save humanity from the Sentinel domination. With the threat of the Sentinels over, the X-Men are unaware that back at their mansion, someone lurks in the shadows waiting for their return to pose a new threat to the group of mutants. And the story is continued. Next issue.
Bum, bum, bum.
I wonder who could be lurking at their mansion. Anyways, yeah.
I had some idea, but he was sent to a museum in deep space, so it couldn't possibly be him.
No way. No way.
No, never.
Anyways, that was X-Men 16. The weakest of the Sentinel arc, in my opinion, but...
Same here, but it still got a 4 from me.
I gave it a 3. This one didn't hit on the same frequency as the others.
It didn't hit quite as hard, but it had a couple of good things in it.
I mean, Trask's sacrifice is brilliant.
Trask's sacrifice and the use of Marvel Girl.
That's pretty fair, too.
For a woman in 1960s Marvel to be instrumental in stuff working is pretty rare.
That's true.
They granted, yeah.
I think my main issue with that one was the bullshit going on with Xavier and the authorities more or less than anything else. I did not like the parts with them.
That bothered me the first time through. The second time through, it didn't bother me. It felt less Deus Ex Xavier-ish than usual.
Yeah, but it was a sign of the times.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, the authority was a bad word, you know, at this point in American history. So, you know, anybody who fought against the man was a hero.
Yeah, it did feel more like they got out of it on their own rather than Xavier swooping in and saving them.
Yeah.
Because they beat the Sentinels around them, and then Xavier just shut off all the other ones after they had already shown they could beat them.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, let's move ahead and figure out who the hell was in their mansion with X-Men number 17. This one's titled, "And None Shall Survive." Man, they're in trouble again. I can't believe this. Stanley writing this.
They're clearly trying to call back to Juggernaut with that cover.
Yeah. Dick Gars on inks. Jack Kirby, Dick Gars on cover. Alrighty, Simic on letters. December 1965. Merry Christmas, I guess. 20-page story, and I will let Dan take this away.
Oh, boy. None shall survive.
No one will survive.
Yeah. Well, following their battle against Master Mold and the Sentinels, the X-Men are given medical attention by the military, who commend the Professor and the X-Men for their assistance in destroying the menace. With Cyclops, Beast, and Iceman injured, the Professor allows them to be taken by the military paramedics to the hospital, but mentally cautions his students to protect their secret identities. How they're supposed to do that, we don't know, but okay. You know, at the hospital, the doctors are unsure how to treat Iceman, who is in an unconscious delirium, prompting Professor to worry about this potentially being his first failure. Checking on the other X-Men under the pretext as a casual friend instead of their leader, the Professor overhears a doctor commenting on the fact that they could learn so much more if they would be allowed to just cut them open and do experiments. No, sorry. If they knew who the young mutant's parents are. How would that make it... What?
Don't question it. It's okay.
Okay. Finding the angel flying over a crowd of nurses, trying to look down their blouses, he's checking the answering service with the mansion. The Professor is informed by Warren... You rang? ...that his parents are coming to visit because they hadn't heard from their son in a while. The Professor calls the Worthingtons and tells them that he's on a field trip with his students for materials for a coming research paper. Although the Worthingtons are relieved, they insist on stopping by for a visit for only a few minutes. Concerned not only over this, but his sense of dread, the Professor sends Warren back to the mansion to scout around. Warren arrives at the mansion to find no trouble on the grounds. However, upon walking inside, he is almost smashed by an axe, which suddenly levitates out of the hand of a decorative suit of armor, and smashes into the wall.
This is why I gave it to Dan.
Struggling, really struggling, flying through the mansion, the angel...
Yeah, I didn't have to read it.
Yeah. The angel accidentally flies into a mirror.
He's like a moth, okay?
No, I'm picturing a blue jay face planting on a pane of glass.
That's exactly what happens.
I'm so he knocks himself out. Oh, wow. This strange attacker watches, lurking in the shadows, boasting that this is the first of the X-Men he will defeat. Using a mirror. Wow.
That's not the worst way he defeats one of them.
If it wasn't for the fact that they're not trying to be funny, that would be fucking hilarious. Oh my god, that would be so funny. And back at the hospital. Ooh, look, it's another me, and it's getting bigger. Yeah. The last thing to go through his mind was his ass, apparently. Back at the hospital, the doctor has almost done his examination of Cyclops, wanting to finish up by examining his eyes. There's a plan. Cyclops gives him a demonstration of his powerful optic blasts, explaining that he cannot control them. Finding no other problems with the young mutant, the doctor dismisses Cyclops into the professor's care, and the two walk the grounds discussing the state of the other X-Men. The professor has lost mental contact with Angel. He's doing his best impersonation of a piece of roadkill. And decides that the Beast and Marvel Girl should remain at the hospital to watch over the Iceman, who is too injured to move. I'll just put him on ice. He'll be fine. The Professor and Cyclops agree to return to the mansion. They find no sign of Warren and are suddenly startled when Cerebro's mutant alarm goes off. Going to investigate, the Professor examines his computer and learns there is a super powerful evil mutant on the premises. Before Cyclops can warn him, the Professor is suddenly wrapped up in the coils of a mental wave distorter, because we all have one of those lying around in our basement, and sealed behind a transparent shield. Cyclops attempts to blast through with his optic blast, but finds it redirected against him. The lights then go out, and Cyclops is attacked by their foe in the darkness. Unable to see his foe, Cyclops is easily felled in hand-to-hand combat against their unknown attacker.
I'm going to cut in here, because okay. That summary doesn't capture the true beauty of it. Do you know how the attacker knew where to hit Cyclops? What? Cyclops in the dark?
How?
He waited by the light switch and clubbed Cyclops when he came to turn on the lights. And no, I'm not joking.
That's actually great. I like that. A little Silence of the Lambs going on there. Yeah. Okay. Back at the hospital, Beast is totally recovered from his injuries, which he shows off for Marvel Girl. Jean is concerned about the professor and also decides to check on
my injuries.
Bobby, I'm all blue and furry. When they find that Iceman is still in a coma, the two decide to venture to the mansion to see what's happened to the professor and the others. Arriving at the mansion, they rush into the front door and are shocked to find that the entire inside hallway has been coated in a frictionless surface. Beast suddenly slides across the room and into a specially prepared room. Jean manages to avoid the same fate by using her telekinetic powers. She is then confronted by the mystery foe, whom she recognizes immediately. Trying to keep him back with her telekinetic power, she passes out after inhaling odorless sleep gas. Why did it have to be odorless?
I assume because they'd hold their breath otherwise.
Wouldn't matter.
Is Stan logic in other comics anyway.
Yeah, okay. Back at the hospital again. This is like a really bad episode of CSI. The doctor.
It's like a really bad comic.
Yeah. The doctor caring for Iceman is called into the mutant's room because his pulse is getting weaker. He's going cold. And he's becoming more delirious. With no other choice, the doctor decides to try a new experimental sulfa drug on Iceman and sends the nurse to go get it. Yeah, that's a good idea. Back at the mansion, again. The X-Men's mysterious attacker seals them in an enclosure of a high-altitude balloon. Yeah, I'm confused. And sets it loose with the hopes that they will perish in the sky when they float up to 100,000 feet into the air.
So yeah, I don't Stan see why you're struggling here, Dan.
Doesn't understand how balloons work?
No.
It's okay. Silver Age Stan. Do you really think he understands science of anything?
Yeah. Releasing the X-Men into the air, the villain is satisfied that he has finally destroyed the X-Men. Shortly after, the Worthingtons arrive to visit their son, where when they knock at the door, they are greeted by the man who attacked the X-Men, none other than Magneto. The story is continued in the next issue.
More like Magneto.
Kind of like Nutella? Yeah.
Well, I hate Magneto here as much as I hate Nutella, so I guess that's pretty...
There you go.
Accurate.
Werner Roth helped pencil this issue under the pseudonym J. Gavin. Just so you know.
Yeah.
I think this is the last issue for a while that Kirby will also be credited on.
Yeah.
Next issue, it switches over to just Werner Roth, which
Kirby
is fair.
Kirby saw a chance to run.
Been basically him for a while.
Yeah, here's a little trivia for you. Professor X breaks his own rule of not connecting himself as the X-Men's leader when he calls Beast by his surname on the first panel of page 4. This slip-up was revised in later printings, including the digitized version of this issue, and where Professor X calls Hank by his code name.
Okay, that is interesting, because I've only read the digitized version, so I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
That's clearly just Stan bad writing.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of bad writing, here's a bad cover. X-Men 18. Wow.
Ugh. Well, I gave that one a 2. I really didn't like it, so I know I'm way lower than the site average, but
I gave it a 3. I thought it was pretty good. I mean, lot of the stuff, like the mirror and the balloon, so are stupid. So but it's Silver Age stupid that you just kind of have to roll with for this era of comics.
No, I felt like I was fucking reading the comics equivalent of watching a fucking Colt Cabana match.
Oh, it was just, it was so bad.
That actually makes perfect sense. Because I would also rate most Colt Cabana matches 3 out of 5.
Yeah. No, that was so bad it was good. I actually enjoyed that. The back and forth between the hospital and the mansion over and over and over again.
This was painful to me.
It was funny.
No, it wasn't supposed to be funny.
It was hilarious. Are you sure? Like, seriously, are you sure it wasn't meant to be funny?
Yeah.
There's no irony involved in this at all?
Maybe the mirror thing was kind of meant to be, but besides that, I don't think it was.
The mirror thing was not meant to be funny. The mirror thing was totally not meant to be funny.
Well, then I don't think any of it was meant to be.
No, this comic was not meant to be funny.
I'm serious.
It was funny, but it wasn't meant to be funny. Stan was very sincere when he was writing it.
That's kind of sad.
Wow. That's unsettling. Oh, do we want to go for number 18, or do we?
Not really,
just
but I mean, you're
really
the one reading
idea.
The synopsis, so I don't really
Would
care.
Would we rather start off next podcast with it? It's best to just get it done with and have some nice Fury coming up. Is it Fury or is it a story? Yeah, that's Fury. Okay, I wasn't sure if we were getting Fury or Strange.
I personally, I prefer the X-Men. Anyway. Are we ready for this mind-numbing conclusion? Is this a conclusion?
Yeah.
Yes, this is a conclusion.
Okay.
X-Men number 18. If Iceman should fail, all the same fucking people that we've been saying the whole episode.
Genuine except no Jack.
Well, yeah, but you already mentioned that.
Jacked off.
Yeah, he's jacked off forever. January 1966 release date, Happy New Year. 20-page story. Noticeably, this one has a worse site average than the last one, so this gets even better. Anyways, Dan will take this one away to get us through the end of this. Technically, five. These were all kind of connected, so this ongoing story.
I still think of it as two separate arcs, even though they included a lot of recovery from the Sentinel battle in the last issue.
Yeah. I mean, technically, the Sentinel one continued off of Juggernaut, so, I mean,
yeah,
it's been one continuous story for a while.
That's just that they're starting to get continuity.
Ooh. Hey, here we go, guys. Brace yourselves. Professor X.
I'm probably going to zone out.
Yeah. Professor X, Angel, Cyclops, and Marvel Girl have all been defeated by Magneto, who put the team into a high-altitude hot air balloon, hoping that his hated foes would perish once it reaches its destination of 100,000 feet. Magneto revels over the victory, magnetically lifting the mansion out of its foundation. He then decides to use the mansion as his own base of power and sets the house back down on the ground. Entering the residence of his hated foes, he then uses his magnetic powers to destroy Cerebro. However, his destruction is interrupted when the Worthingtons arrive for a visit. Magneto confronts them at the front door and uses magnetic hypnotism to put them under his thrall.
Yeah, that's the power Magneto has, by the way. You didn't know that?
What is magnetic hypnotism?
Yeah.
This is not the first time he's used it either.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, okay, I can't believe you haven't been paying attention to the title, Dan.
So sorry. I just...
No, this is just the running theme of Stan having no clue how magnets work.
Early Magneto fucking sucks. And it's a real letdown, because Magneto's one of my favorite villains, and it's been pissing me off to read.
That's probably why you took these early ones so much harder than I did.
Yeah, it's silly, but it's not horrible. Anyway, he puts them under his thrall, ordering them to go to sleep upstairs in the bedrooms. Magneto, then comes to
realize... I call him Magneto, because I think that's what they say in the movie.
Yeah, but that's not how it's spelled.
Yeah, well, no, it is written Magneto, but it's pronounced Magneto.
Okay, sorry. Magneto then comes to realize that one of the X-Men is missing. And waits for him to return to the mansion so that his revenge can be complete. Magneto boasts how Iceman is the weakest of all the X-Men. Meanwhile, Iceman is still recovering from his injuries, sustained battling the Sentinels. That was loud. His doctor injects the unconscious mutant with a new medicine with a special device. It stops the boy's delirious rantings. However, if he will awaken, remains to be seen. Meanwhile, high above in the weather balloon that might mean their doom, Professor X exerts all his... Why didn't he just, like, take a hammer and bash all their skulls? Like, or something. Why this...
The conclusion to this balloon thing is really bad, so I can't wait for you to get to it.
Well, I'm still trying to figure out why you bothered with the balloon. Like, seriously.
Because it's the comic code.
Mr. Bond.
And they're not allowed to actually murder people.
They can do it off camera. Okay? Start the next episode with, sorry, the X-Men are all dead, and that's the end of the issue. Bada bing, bada boom. Seriously. You know, there's other X-Men out there they can get. Right? Anyways. Professor X exerts all his mental power to try and overload the mental wave disruptor that has been attached to his head. His ploy succeeds and he revives the rest of the X-Men. They begin to assess their abysmal situation and wonder how Magneto could have returned after being taken from the Earth by the Stranger. Back at the mansion, Magneto uses his magnetic powers to assist him in constructing a device that can duplicate body cells and create an army of mutant clones. using the Worthingtons as a source material. Good call. I like that. That's a good idea. Probing the situation mentally, the professor learns of Magneto's plans and tries to revive Iceman, who awakens from his coma and agrees to go out and try and stop Magneto. Marvel Girl is then instructed to use her telekinetic powers as an anchor, preventing their balloon from floating up any higher. The professor then probes Magneto's mind so that he and the X-Men can learn how Magneto managed to return to Earth. But Magneto's helmet should stop him from being able to do that, shouldn't it?
That's a retcon from later.
Oh, okay.
I don't think the helmet had any effect other than looking cool at this point.
Yeah, okay. Sure. They discover that shortly after Magneto and Toad were taken to the Stranger's homeworld, Magneto began plotting his escape. One day, they were left to their own devices, and Magneto, taking advantage of the fact that the Stranger allowed them to roam his planet freely, brought Toad to a location where a number of rocket ships had been collected by the Stranger and put on display in a museum. Convenient. Magneto then used his magnetic powers to gain access to one of the rockets, and after kicking Toad off the entrance ladder, Magneto flew the rocket back to Earth. Toad gets a really raw deal. You know that? You know what? I even in the movies, Toad gets a really raw deal.
Toad's one of my favorites of the evil mutants because he grovels so much. It's hilarious.
But it's just, it's unfair to him. In my mind, it's just completely unfair. Okay, so, are we still, are you guys still awake?
Yep.
Okay. Bobby arrives.
Sorry, I was dissociating a little bit.
Yeah. Bobby arrives at the mansion, spies on Magneto to learn what his plan is. God, this is going to take forever to read this. I've seen Magneto creating mutant clones from the Worthingtons' dinner. Iceman sneaks into the room where they're sleeping and uses his ice powers to stop the flow of information, leaving the clones inert. Furious that his creations have not yet come to life, Magneto enters the room and attacks Iceman. However, Magneto underestimates Iceman's abilities, and Bobby manages to fight off Magneto's attacks, creating an ice slide to send the two of them out of the mansion. Cool. Cool. That's cool. Meanwhile, as voiced by Samuel L. Jackson, apparently. Meanwhile, aboard the balloon, the professor comes up with a solution to get them back on the ground. Pop the balloon. Right? Yeah, I'm just saying. He orders Cyclops to use his optic blast to poke a pinpoint hole in the balloon so that the heel... I thought it was a hot air balloon.
Kind of. Maybe.
But it says there was helium inside there.
Yeah, it looked like a helium balloon earlier. I think it was probably a transcription.
They specifically said hot air balloon.
Yeah, but I think that was the person
making... They had Donald Trump
the...
come in and speak inside the balloon.
I think that was the person doing the summary messing up rather than... The actual comic, I'm pretty sure it was helium.
It looks like a hot air balloon.
Because even in the original picture, there's no sort, like even in the first issue where it appears, there's no source of hot air ever illustrated.
Yeah, no, it kind of looks shaped. It looks like it's one, but without the actual source of the hot air. So that's probably why the person got confused writing it.
Yeah, because they're in a ball hanging from the balloon, but there's no actual.
So, okay.
Yeah, this whole thing's fucking stupid anyway.
It's stupid, but I'm pretty sure that's not an error that can be blamed on the comic itself.
No,
I'm just
I think
quickly
it's a writing
checking
issue.
To see how Magneto describes it.
No, Mr. Xavier. I expect you to die. Okay. So the helium slowly leaks out and they can safely descend to the ground below. The X-Men safely land on the ground and attack Magneto together. However, the Master of Magnetism manages to fight them off. Before they can renew their attack, Magneto magnetically traps Iceman and threatens to kill him if the X-Men don't cease their fighting. You kids be good or I'll turn this hot air balloon around right now. The Iceman tells the others not to surrender to for him. However, Angel flies in and manages to pull him free from Magneto's grasp. That was good of him. Good thing he wasn't up there in the hot air balloon, because then he could just, like, fly away.
Yeah, man. Iceman's the weakest X-Men.
Yeah, because Angel has the power of flight. You know, if he'd been up there, oh, boy. You know, what would he do? Like, you know, with his wings.
Poop on Magneto's car?
Well, yeah, to be fair, he could do that. That would be funny.
I'm just assuming he's like half pigeon.
Oh boy. Only his English, Bill. Only his English. The X-Men. Sorry. Is not rat. Sorry, channeling Fawlty Towers now. Gotta get back to reality. The X-Men and Magneto resume their battle until Professor X tells them all to stop fighting and surrender. The X-Men are shocked at this order, and Magneto gloats over superiority over the X-Men. God, the writing is badly done here.
Okay, however, so I've checked
on the synopsis and the comic.
Yeah,
I've checked. There is no confirmation on what sort of balloon it is.
Okay.
It's vaguely shaped like a hot air balloon, but it doesn't actually have the source, so I can see how they would get confused.
Yeah, I think it's intended to be a helium balloon with just a gondola below that they're sealed in.
Okay.
But it's not described anywhere, so any assumptions about what type of balloon it is are on the writer of the summary.
Okay. However, this only proves to be a delaying tactic on the professor's part, as he has delivered a mental summons to the stars. Sorry. Calling the stranger back to Earth to collect Magneto. Magneto flees the scene with the stranger trailing on behind him. The X-Men then rush inside to stop the machine, which has now begun to operate since Iceman's ice is thawed, before it can bring Magneto's slaves, mutants, to life. With the machine deactivated, the clones disintegrate and the X-Men destroy the machine. The next day, the Worthingtons awaken from their sleep with absolutely no memory of their encounter with Magneto and join the X-Men, now in the civilian guises, for breakfast. What do you think? House of pancakes, guys? Yeah, man, I felt like I slept for days. I'm hungry. Okay. To be fair, that was nowhere near as horrible as 90% of the shite we have had to talk about for the last year.
I didn't like this either. This was an R2
muffin.
For me. They this fucking another... got...
it's got enough plot holes to, you know...
They fucking...
In.
Their way to get down with the balloon, they could have done the whole fucking time. Nothing special happened.
Silver Age inconsistency only starting to bother you now?
Yeah,
because I've got bad news about the next 3 years of comics.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like there was one of the X-Men up there was somebody who could fly. Right? You know, trapped up there, you know, who had wings and could fly away and, you know, maybe, you know, come up with a way to save them. Because that would have been really convenient.
Yeah, he could have just flown the rest of them down.
Yeah.
Actually, two of them could fly. Because they spend a whole lot of time establishing that Marvel Girl can fly now.
And she can levitate people.
Yeah, I mean...
They could have all gotten down at once at any point.
Yeah.
The plot holes with some of this bad writing is almost as embarrassing as a man you face in fucking Newcastle.
Well, let's be reasonable here. It's not that bad.
Yeah, not quite as bad as Man U. Right. But anyway, honestly, I'm not going to lie, I did not mind this as much as some of the other crap we've read.
Yeah, this isn't that bad. It's
not
dumb. It's hokey. Silly. It's got all the failures of Silver Age comics. But it's in the Silver Age.
Yeah, it's silly, but it's
Yeah, but I've complained about some of these other
yeah, ones complaining about the tropes of an era within that era seems unfair.
With the god-awful writing with Hulk, the Fantastic Four, this is actually a step up. Whether you guys
I wouldn't say this is a step up from Fantastic Four at this point.
This is a definite step up from most Fantastic Four we've covered to this point. Yeah. This has continuity.
Yeah. That's
first of all, yes. But this also isn't the generic bad guy. This isn't the generic, you know, cliffhanger crap, you know, with page after tedious page of, you know, fighting. There's a bit of slapstick humor, intentional or otherwise, in it, and there's sort of a unique battle between Magneto and the rest of them. Like, it's very different. So I'm going to say it's leaps and bounds better than some of what we've covered.
Yeah.
Any Hulk issue, right?
I comfortably gave this one a 3.
Yeah.
It's not as good as the last one. It's definitely the weakest issue we covered today.
Granted,
but I still feel fine giving it a 3.
Yeah, the entire arc is actually not that bad. Right, I think as a whole, the arc would even hit a 4.
The biggest issue was the Worthingtons coming to visit the school.
I hated that, too.
Because Angel had just been over to visit them. It's not, and then all of a sudden they're like, we haven't seen Warren for months. We need to come visit. He was home 2 issues ago. That was yesterday in comic time.
Yeah, but no, like I say, it's
fine. I mean, that's just another plot hole,
good.
Though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that hurt it, but I still gave both parts of the second arc.
I just 3. Didn't like this. This was not my personal taste.
Wow.
At all.
Really?
I didn't find this any fun.
Needs more Impossible Man.
I probably would have liked it more.
It was nowhere near as tedious as a Fantastic Four issue.
It also was hurt by being right after the Sentinel story, because the Sentinel story was so well put together and fought through that this one just looked terrible compared to it.
Yes, this one, I will agree with that. This one is definitely hurt by following the Sentinel story. I took a break after finishing the Sentinel story last night and then came back to it today. And I think that's why I liked it much more the second time through.
Yeah, well, I'm just talking about the whole story in general.
Yeah.
Right, not just this one particular issue. I'm talking more about all of it. But I honestly didn't mind it that much. Right, this was
I don't know.
A nice break from the
usual. I liked them kind of putting Iceman over a little bit. That was cool.
Unfortunately, they buried him in the second part.
Yeah, they kind of did. The first part started off good.
Cold.
Like, it's set up so that he should come in and save the day.
Well, yeah, because they're doing
everyone's
the whole Captain America's the weakest Avenger thing.
Yeah, everyone's been talking about how he's the weakest member of the Fantastic Four, and he's just a kid, and then he finally gets an ego boost from Cyclops referring to him as a man, and he's finally going to get a chance to prove himself, and then he comes in and fucks it up.
Yeah.
To be fair,
modern comic... That would be the way to go, where they can write the nuance of actually having him grow as a person like he was trying too hard.
Looking ahead, that kind of is in line with Iceman.
Yeah, this is the Silver Age, though. They don't do subtlety and nuance.
No.
Yeah. So there you go.
I don't think Stan knows what nuance is, to be honest.
Sure he does. It's when he's only alliterative for half the issue.
Come on. Oh, shit. Well, this was an up and down ride this week.
Oh, this was all X Men all the time. Horrible. This was not that horrible. And to be honest, we've had to go through much worse crap than this.
Oh,
I agree with that statement. I still didn't like this. It's not like I gave these ones.
When the highlights of their last year were Tales from Asgard, come on. This was not that bad.
Don't even agree with that statement. Tales of Asgard was shit half the time.
That was kind of my point.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to the good part of Tales of Asgard yet.
Yeah, no, but I mean, for some of the stuff we've made, this wasn't that bad. This feels like they've turned a corner, sort of around this
era. This is we did turn the corner recently, where 65 is one of my favorite years. 65, 66, because it's where they turned the corner from standalone episodes restored a status quo by the end of it to ongoing storytelling.
Yeah.
Ongoing continuity helps go a long way for enjoyment of comics for me.
Well,
I like long unrunning stories, which is kind of a lost art sometimes nowadays. Because people are only given like 5 issues to do something, or they're given 20 issues or whatever.
They do the long running stories, but they're all in the big events.
That too.
Yeah.
You can't do anything in a person's standalone comic because they need to be in position for the next company wide event. So it's pretty much just put them in a holding pattern until that.
Yeah, put them in a helium balloon and let them hang there for a while.
Time to make Kamala Khan a mutant.
Okay. Well, there you go, guys.
That was mostly good. There were, even the last two did have some moments I did enjoy, but
yeah,
it just wasn't for me. And I didn't hate them. I didn't give them ones. I gave them twos. I just didn't like them. But could have been worse, like you said. I mean, it's not like we were reading a giant man, so.
Yeah, well,
or Human Torch.
Okay. Yeah, let's keep this going. Or Spider-Man.
Nobody else is saying that.
They don't have to. I said it.
Well, I mean, I guess this is about. I guess those were about in line with the Amazing Spider-Man Annual number 2 we covered last week. So,
yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, until the MCU gives Jonah his own film, you know, I don't care.
As long as it's still J.K. Simmons playing.
I will watch the shit out of that. But yeah, J.K. Simmons.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. The J. Jonah Jameson movie. That would be so good. It would be so awesome. Better than
anyways, I suppose we'll get ready to get
zero gravity.
We'll get ready to get out of here. But before we do, what we're covering next week, we are covering Strange Tales number 137 A Story, 138 A Story, 139 A Story, 140 A Story, 141 A Story, Tales of Suspense number 69 B Story, and 70 B Story. We're doing 7 next week to make up for the fact we only did 5 this week. And half of those, they're only half stories anyway, so that's not as bad.
Oh no.
What?
I saw the Captain Americas at the end of it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'll be sick next week, sorry. God.
This is like a bad week for Dan. This is Dan.
The Strange
this
Dan. Run, or the Fury Run is pretty good, but
it is,
those Captain Americas at the end are not
Dan's
great.
Not into the Spy Fury, though, as much. I think Dan prefers War Fury than over Spy Fury if he was to choose one.
I hate Camp Fury on any level.
Well, I know you. I feel like if you were choosing one, though, you'd go with the war stuff so far. And then you peaked
really,
this week with your X-Men.
Okay, you know what? Yeah, never mind. We'll tear Fury apart later.
Dan just hates Fury. So stay tuned next week for Dan not to be sick.
I didn't see any point to him.
Don't, yeah. Stay tuned next week where Dan's not sick and we'll bury Nick Fury.
Yeah, you give me the Nick Furies, please.
I mean, it's Nick Fury or Captain America, so.
Captain America is like kicking somebody when they're down. Yeah. All right, Nick Fury, let me take
Captain America's the present you give somebody after a loss to Newcastle with their third string team.
That's cold. That's really cold. But I like it.
Anyways, before Bill just logs off here, let's get out of here. If you enjoyed this and are watching on YouTube, please leave a like, subscribe, comment, even share if you like. available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify as well. If you're on Spotify, click that poll. Let us know why you love Magneto and his balloon. And anyways, we will see you all next episode. And peace out.
Have a good one, everyone.
Bye-bye.